This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am a fired up Beam.
Oh, we're fired up today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to get right into the fact that you have a humongous match with MLS Cup on the line for Hell is Real. Jesus. I mean, it's the Eastern Conference Finals. It's your beloved Columbus Crew versus Kentucky FC playing down there in Hillbilly Land, a.k.a. Cincinnati, where their pizza sucks, their chili is gross.
Too sweet. I do like Skyline, but...
I know you like Skyline, but not this week you don't.
No.
Not this week you don't.
Nope.
We're out on all that.
Dirty Franks all the way.
That's right. Yeah. So we got plenty to discuss about that. We'll talk about the matchup. We'll talk about victory over Orlando, all those things. We will talk about a suspended player for FC Cincinnati and get into a little Champions League as well. We also will have an interview with Presbez. Tim Bezpachenko, the Columbus Crew president, joined Morning Juice, which Beam, of course, hosts every Monday through Friday.
I do host it Monday.
6 to 9 a.m. right here on The Fans. So you will hear that interview as well. We will have that later on in the podcast.
You can listen to Bobby Carpenter talk soccer.
That's good. I like it, man. I like to hear the general, as he's known, talking a little ball.
He did a good job.
That's good. I like that.
Bez, here's a long tease for you.
Yeah.
Gave him a good question, which whenever we have someone on the show and they say good question, we always point to each other.
We do the same thing on ours. We do the exact same thing. For those who don't know, who don't do interviews regularly on massive radio stations, it is in my mind, a sign of that person going, I absolutely hate your question, so I'm going to say good question because you've got me. Like, I don't have a good answer right away, so I'm going to say that's a great question.
Yeah.
Because then that gives them time to, like, formulate their answer because they actually didn't like your question. It's how I always view that. Whenever we get it, we always mock each other on the show. So, yeah, but that's, we point at each other, too. That's funny that you guys do that.
We both do snap and point.
Got a point. Yeah. Got a point. You got it. We do more of like a pro wrestler, like, like we're getting jazzed up.
The Cucho and Lucas.
Yeah, a little Cucho and Lucas thing. We do that a little bit. Yeah, that's right. So let's start off with the Crew getting the victory in Orlando, which we shouldn't bury the lead on that. Obviously, that's old news now because we know this game's coming up in mere hours, depending on when you're listening for this game against FC Cincinnati. But you were not as afraid about going to Orlando.
Nope.
And you were right not to be afraid. And I think I was more concerned that we were going to get what looked like could have happened, which was you get this 0-0 game.
I was thinking, hey, when we
you
got
get down and then all it takes is one fluky dump. You've pretty much controlled the game. Yeah. You've done what you needed to do. You just didn't get the goal. One fluky dumb play ruins your day. And fortunately for us, that did not happen.
Thank you, Patrick Schulte.
Tell you what, man. Patrick Schulte, rightfully so, man of the match in that one, and he has been a revelation this year.
He's been really good. When you look at, and I know we were highly critical of Patrick after the first instance of Hell is Real this year,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of looked at it, well, there's one of two ways to go, right? I mean, it's either a learning opportunity or you sulk, and then you let your play spin out of control. Now, to his credit, he's had a couple of moments where it's maybe not been the best. But as of late and through these playoffs, I mean, he's been tremendous.
Yeah, he really has. He's been tremendous all season, pretty much since that game. And I even chalked that game up to that mistake. You've seen how dangerous the Crew like to live at the back.
Yeah.
This is what they do. This is what Wilfried Nancy encourages them to do. You are going to have mistakes, especially early on in the season. And I know it was May, but still, that's fairly early in an MLS season, especially with a new system. And he has, I think, performed tremendously since then. So, including, you know, being a part of the team that shut out Cincinnati the second time we played. So, as much as we could dwell on that Orlando game, it was a great performance. I will say, Christian Ramirez.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you to Wilfried Nancy for putting him in.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't know why we were waiting so long to use some subs, but we got there eventually. And Christian Ramirez has been just, you know, the chest x-ray with the dog. He's got that one.
Yeah,
that's what he is, man.
There's he's got
that dog in him. He does. That was great after the game saying, I got to get on a plane. Get me on a plane so I can go to my wife. She's having a baby.
Yeah, she's in labor.
Yeah, man. What to play with that kind of pressure and then also like just of the game and then know, oh, yeah, and also I got to get home because I got family stuff going on.
Little
man.
Baby Orlando was born on Sunday. Congratulations to him and his wife.
That's right. Orlando Kaká, I believe. The pride of that's the only place Kaká's known for playing.
Orlando Kaká, Nani.
That's right. Yeah.
Ramirez.
It's the only it's the only places he's known for playing.
That's right.
Right?
It was a tremendous game. And to your earlier point, it was transpiring exactly the way that you thought it would. I said win the middle 15s, I think is what I said. And the Crew controlled that game. I mean, for the majority. There were six, seven opportunities in the first half. A little bit less in the second half, but it was one of those games where you know that Orlando's going to do that. Like, that's what they do. They have a great defensive system that they run. They rely heavily on their goalkeeper, and they rely heavily on their center backs making desperate challenges in the box, and they're so good at doing it. And then you start racking them up two opportunities, three opportunities, four, five, six, seven. And then I started to get into the bone psyche where I'm like, oh, boy.
It just takes one. It just takes one to break through, but it also takes one to break you in that type of game. And it's so worrisome that you're going to be the one that, after having all that kind of performance, which I know Orlando wanted them to have a little bit, the Crew like to be on the ball. Orlando was fine to let them do that. But I just was afraid, man, if we get busted up on a counter, that's going to –
Well, and that's obviously what their game plan was. Like, because a couple of times their big opportunities came on counters, and especially at the end of the match, was it the 92nd minute, 91st minute? It's like that's the best opportunity. Player for Orlando shoots it wide.
I think I tweeted out, I just had like six heart attacks like right in a row. They just, it was so, that was so bad. But
when you got to extra time, though, I'm like, they got this in the bag. Like, they've got it.
I'm glad you felt that way. I was still very nervous, but I liked, you know, when I see Chris Ramirez come on, I feel really good.
Yeah.
I think you got to use him better as a super sub. I feel like Nancy does, but that guy has ice in his veins. You know who else has ice in his veins? Cucho Hernandez.
Jeez.
Man, and again, I know people can look at that and say, well, he scored because the keeper's way out and all this other stuff, and they're desperate. They're trying to get a goal. There's nothing else to do there other than try to tie the game up. Your keeper's coming up, trying to be a part of the play, do whatever he can, gets caught out. But Cucho also has the wherewithal to see it and not take too many touches.
Fire it.
He saw it, fired it, nailed it, by the way. Yeah. Not easy to do on the run. I mean, you know, the trajectories when you are that far out, if you're off by a hair, it looks like it's 3 feet wide by the time it gets there because of just
or
one
the pace.
Little,
I mean, somebody
someone can run back and get to it. All those things. And he crushed it. Not his first goal from midfield, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
This guy is...
Is that Chicago that he scored? Or was that Lucas?
I forget. They both had one. I want to say at least, but yeah, Cucho I know had one from. I got to go back. Yeah, because didn't they have them on almost like a few weeks apart?
I think they did.
It was fairly close. Yes, but in either case, that happened. Orlando City get dumped. We'll see you next year, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe you'll suck again.
Aiden Morris just gets beaten up.
Tell you, man, he has a lot of people I saw after that game kind of coming back around on him, of like, all right, I guess he is pretty good. I don't know where the people went on him. I mean, I know he's had some games where maybe he has looked like he's gotten beat a few times, that kind of thing, but I always think he puts in the work.
Is not questionable.
No, but I also think, I mean, he is skilled on the ball, and in what they need to do, often it doesn't involve him making the most, like, he's not going to make dimes from midfield, right? Necessarily, that's not his...
It's not his game.
But he can.
Right.
Like, because he can do it, I think sometimes people go, oh, man, why doesn't he do it more often? And it's like, because that's not his role. That's not what they're asking him to do. That's not how they're playing. If he starts doing that and trying to be like Pirlo back there, God bless if he could be. I'm just saying, but that's not how the Crew want him to play.
Right.
You know, they want him and Nagby to kind of slowly build, control that, take your time, and do not let anybody get too dangerous with any of their chances. Even when they're going to counter, make sure those counters are coming from the sides, from the wings. They're not coming from right down Broadway.
They're like pincers or vice techniques, kind of.
Yeah, you're right. You have to find a way to just bust them up a little bit as they're doing that counter. And you've got to be able to be strong in the tackle. You got to be not afraid. I don't know. I mean, I think him and Nagby are a good pairing. They work very well together. I have no lack of confidence in those two guys.
I got so nervous. I can't remember if it was after the Ramirez goal or as they were getting into the late stages of normal time, where the Crew just could not seem to possess the ball at all and were continuously giving away the ball in dangerous areas. I think Rudy Camacho played a really good game.
Yeah.
But that chance at the end of the game where he turns around, he fires the header like just into a path of an Orlando player.
Oh.
If there's one like bane of this team's existence, it is closing out late games and being able to make the smart play. Because they all have the ability to link up with each other, and that's what makes them so fun to watch. But when another team is pressing you in the way that Orlando was, and I'm guessing it had to be probably after Ramirez scored his goal because Orlando was really putting the screws to it, to him on that. But they just couldn't link up two passes together in the back, and then all of a sudden Orlando, boom, on the counter.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what makes this team equally as fun to watch is what makes it equally as stressful.
Mm-hmm. Totally agreed. That's where we, I think, need to go next is into this Cincinnati game. Hell is real for a berth to MLS Cup.
Jeez. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, figure that it would come to this?
I mean, the wildest dreams previously involved FC Cincinnati being the Wooden Spoon recipients for three straight years. So, yeah. No. I mean, I didn't think they would ever get to this point where they would become, like, at least not in the next 5 to 10 years. I didn't see them being Eastern, like, best team in the league all year statistically, Supporter Shield winners, all that stuff. I didn't see that coming for them. They had a hell of a year. Tip your cap to them on that.
Done a really nice job of managing that roster.
They really have. I mean, it was a disaster when they first launched that team. And Pat Noonan came in and has restored some sanity there. Remember the dearth of managers they had where they brought in all these guys? They even had the wrong picture for old Yop Stom. When they brought him in, they had a different bald guy. It was just like...
That's Eric Ten Hag.
It was a joke. It was a joke of a organization there for quite a number of years, and now they've got things turned around, and they're doing right by their fans. I'll give them credit for that. Now that's all the nice things we're going to say about them, because I'll say one more nice thing about them, and that's this: they have as dangerous of a player as there is in MLS in Luciano Acosta. Lucio Acosta is the real deal. He is the guy. He is. You remember that Wayne Rooney goal where he tracks back. Wins a ball. He's like the last man back for DC United when he was playing in MLS. Tracks back and then dribbles up the field and then hits like an 80-yard bomb.
Yeah, it was Acosta.
Guy gets on. Yep, that was a Lucho Acosta header that was on the end of that. He's the guy who can make that 80-yard pass, though, too. Like, he's everything. He is everything for their offense. He is the real deal. I know everybody who watches MLS knows that, but if you are just someone who's checking this out because you care about the Crew but you haven't really paid attention to anything else, that's the dude to watch on this team. He is everything that they need to stop.
I watched a good portion of that game against Philly on Saturday night, right?
Yeah,
because they started a little bit later than the Crew. Well, since the Crew went into extra time, their game, I think, had already begun. But I watched that, and to Philly's credit, we know Philly's a grimy team, right?
It was either
going to be, do you want Hell is Real in Cincinnati, or do you want Philly coming here with the way that their defense is, because they can play on the road with best across MLS. And I thought Philadelphia was the better team. I thought Philadelphia got screwballed at the end. They didn't go to a VAR call, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later, is also a mess across of
VAR
all of soccer.
Can be a mess all the time. Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't understand if maybe MLS had a better angle. I don't know, but it looked like when the game-winning goal was played, like when the ball was played on, like guy who first touched it and then fed it into the game winner, like, that he was offside, like blatantly, he was like a foot offside.
Yeah.
And they looked at it quickly and were like, nope, good goal. And I gasped when they said that.
Sure.
I'm like, how are you not taking more of a look at it? Again, I don't like to give the benefit of the doubt to MLS. Maybe they had a better angle on it, but the one that we were seeing was blatant. He was offside.
Yeah. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I know that there are Cincinnati fans who think we're trying to discredit them. We're not.
No.
Like, that's just pointing out that, look, as I don't think you have to convince Cincinnati fans that the referees suck sometimes, because if you've missed this story, news dropping just in the last few hours that Matt Miazga has been suspended 3 games by MLS for misconduct following his team's playoff win over the Red Bulls back on November 4th. So in that game, it was like an hour after the game, he had been given a yellow for dissent after like 90 minutes. It went to extra time, if I'm not mistaken. And then I think he got a I'm not sure if he got a second yellow in the game. Either way, oh, yeah, he did because he scored, I think, in penalties maybe. And then he said something to the Red Bull fans, and that drew him a yellow card. He did not like that. He felt that was unjust. So an hour after the game, supposedly, he went to the secure area where the referees are, or whatever you want to call it. He went to their dressing room. I don't know if it's secure. He went there. And if you believe the MLS referees report, they say he came in an aggressive manner, was swearing, had to be removed. If you believe Pat Noonan's report, he went in to like read them a fairy tale story time, night, could go to bed. Just like, I just wanted to, they said he was carrying pizza, like as a gesture of goodwill, mm-hmm. I guess. So depends on which one of these narratives you want to believe. The reality is I've seen multiple MLS reporters who said either they were there or they know people who were there, like sources of theirs who were right there watching it, who confirmed it was aggressive and it was over the line. And that's why he's been suspended for 3 games. So that effectively ends his season. He will not be eligible for this. If somehow Cincinnati wins this game, beats the Crew, he will not be eligible for MLS Cup. Now he's going to appeal that. I'm guessing that the suspension is upheld. But that is the MLS Defender of the Year not going to be available for FC Cincinnati in this game.
Listen, I know that that's a huge disappointment, and you want to take on teams at full strength.
Do you? I don't.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
I'm totally okay with their idiot getting suspended for being an idiot, even if he is really great on the field.
I'm okay.
If Luciano Acosta wants to go screaming at official before this game and get himself thrown out, I'm fine with that. Yeah. I'm fine with all your best players getting thrown out of this game well ahead of time. I do not care how the Crew win this game.
No, I don't either.
I do not care if the referees are blatantly on their side.
I don't care if Diego Rossi rolls around for 15 minutes on the ground.
I don't care. I do not care. Yeah, I'm with you. I've never been the guy who says we have to beat a team at their best or I won't feel like
I think it was Dr. Pete tweeted that. I was like, I'd love to take on the team at full strength. I'm like, not me.
Well,
I'm good.
All right. I'll say this for Dr. Pete. He's an owner in the league. He's trying to be magnanimous. Eh. But here's the reality, man. I'm a fan who wants to see my team in MLS Cup. I want to see Columbus host an MLS Cup. If they get the worst VAR decision in the history of VAR decisions that goes the Crew's way, I do not care. I will say it was a bad decision. I will laugh about it and say, boy, Cincinnati got hosed, didn't they? Anyway, on to MLS Cup. Because guess what? Nobody remembers the calls that went one way or the other. No. Mostly, they remember the trophies. So if the Crew can get a trophy, now I don't think they need that. I don't think the Crew need a bad call to go their way to be able to win this game. You are going to be in Cincinnati at the Tickle. I saw that their fans were already like, please buy up all the seats because every seat you don't buy is going to end up in the hands of a Crew fan. They're scared. They're nervous. They're worried. This is where I think Columbus has the biggest advantage. You can go roster for roster, spot for spot, look at these guys. The reality is there are plenty of guys on this team who have played big minutes in these type of games. Now, I know most of the roster has been turned over since MLS Cup in 2020, right? But one of the guys who was there is that guy we talked about earlier, Aiden Morris, had one of the best games I've ever seen in a Crew uniform in that MLS Cup against Seattle, right? Darlington Nagbe did not get to play in that game because he was with the COVID, but he has played in a lot of these games. He has played in these big moments, obviously, during his time with Portland. So this is a guy who clearly knows how to get the job done. I'm not nervous about this game. I mean, I'm excited for it.
Whoa.
I'm telling you, like, this team has exceeded expectations. The pressure to me is all on Cincinnati. They have been the ones that are the losers in MLS. They have been the ones who need to change the trajectory of their team, and they have. But all that is going to be measured by how you do against Columbus and Hell is Real. That is their rivalry. That is what they want. That is what they've based their existence on. They're the one they won before they ever got to MLS, right? In the USL, when they were in the USL and we played them in the Open Cup and they knocked us out. That game where who was yelling? Was that who got into the argument with the fans? Was that Berhalter or was that?
It had to be Greg at that
point. Or was it Caleb?
No, Caleb wasn't there.
Yeah, it was Berhalter, I think, was getting into it with the fans, right? They were having an argument.
Then I remember Caleb went down there and was like giving them the.
Yeah. That was after we tied.
That was a regular MLS game. Yeah.
But the point being, they've based their existence on, we deserve to be here because look what we did against the Crew in that USL game, right? Now they have a chance to go full circle and say, we deserve to be in MLS because we're in MLS Cup. It's no longer about Columbus for them if they can win this game. The crew know we belong in MLS with the original club. We had the first overall pick. His name was Brian McBride. You should look him up, FC Cincinnati fans. Oh, wait, you don't have to. You were crew fans back then. You don't know all about him. I'm just saying, I'm just pointing out, this is nothing for the crew in the sense of
the pressure of the moment.
We know this team is a good playoff team that's going to be there every year. Cincinnati thinks they are that. This has been a great year for them. They won Supporters Shield. Good for you. You've earned it. You now have to win MLS Cup. Like that, your Supporters Shield will be hollow if you don't win MLS Cup.
Again, hollow cup.
Crew fans know that because we've done that. We've won Supporters Shield and not won MLS Cup, and it sucks.
Yeah.
2009 sucked in the sense of you didn't get the job done, right? That it feels like business left undone. But if the crew are the ones that knock them out, it's in their heads.
It's going to taste so sweet.
Hell is real. If the crew lose to Hell is Real, then it becomes like, all right, if we lose this game, it's now a real rivalry. Now it's official. Cincinnati's got their one they can always hold over our heads. We got to get that back. It becomes more of a thing. But the crew have history. We have everything. This is Cincinnati trying to make some history. So pressure's on them. It's in my mind, it's all for naught if you don't win this game. Crew, no, next year, it's fine. We got all these guys back. We'll do it again.
Yeah.
We'll roll. We'll be right there. We didn't expect necessarily even be in the conference finals this year.
I think a lot of folks were excited that you got home field advantage and were excited that you made the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, for the crew. Yeah, to be able to get, yes, you're exactly right. That was,
I mean, our talk at the beginning of the year was how is Wilfried Nancy going to be able to manage this roster and will his strategy, will they be able to implement it so early on? I mean, that was the real conversations that we had, expectations and everything. And you and I both said that this is a playoff capable roster. It's just the buy-in and the amount of time that Wilf is going to have to be able to put his fingerprints all over this team. And you felt pretty good. I mean, you had Lucas Zelarayan and you had Cucho. So, I mean, you were going to score some goals and you were going to do some dynamite things along the way. But realistically, otherwise, you shipped out Jonathan Mensah and you did some things that fans weren't really happy about. How are you going to be able to rebound from that? Now we're talking about a team who has, I think, surpassed every single expectation that we had this year of them. And now they're sitting on the doorstep of hosting MLS Cup next week.
Let me say it a different way. I bet you, I would bet all the money that I have, which is not much, but I would bet that FC Cincinnati fans, the fans, I don't know about the players, the fans are more nervous about this game than they would be if they had MLS Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they, it'd be like how Buckeye fans to, again, neighbor Eric excluded, he won't get this, but everybody else, when Ohio State played Alabama in that, you know, run of the national championship and beat them, then it's like, oh, and now we got to play Oregon. Who cares? Like you already knew that was going to be over. Like you're going to win that game. You're not nervous at all for that game. Yeah. It was all about beating Alabama because Alabama was the dog. I'm saying FC Cincinnati fans feel probably more, they won't admit it because they of course all can't admit anything. They're emotionally stunted. These people, let's just be real. Come on. Just all living down there by the river. Not sure what state they live in. Driving to Kentucky saying they root for an Ohio team. They're
confusing.
Just so confused. They're so confused.
Yeah.
They root for Kentucky basketball and Ohio State football. They don't know what's going on. They're weird. Cincinnati, odd place. Anyway, their baseball team's who they want to root for, but they're never good. So they had to find a soccer team, I guess.
Where else are you going to go?
Right, where else are you going to go?
Yeah,
right.
Said that.
But I'm just telling you, that pressure is on them. That fan base is feeling it. Those players are going to feel it from those fans in that building. I actually think the players would play better.
A nervous stadium is terrible.
I think they would play better if it was on the road. If this game was in Columbus, I'd be more worried about FC Cincinnati being like playing their game. I think they will be in their heads. They will be nervous. The first 10 minutes are going to be rough for the crew.
Yep.
You're going to have to withstand them playing like they've been hit by electricity. You're going to have 11 Frankie Hadicks running around out there for FC Cincinnati for 10 minutes.
Over under 9.5 minutes, first yellow card. I'm going to hammer the under.
It's under on that 100%. Yes, there's going to be a hard foul. There's going to be something. There's going
to
be.
Refs going to have to get control of the situation.
Yes, it is going to be some high emotion. But I'm telling you, I think you got a lot of guys on the crew who are going to look at each other and go, yeah, that's fine. We're good. Cincinnati's got all the nerves in this game. I think the crew have, as Frankie Hadick once said about MLS Cup, he said we had amps. We didn't have nerves, we had amps.
Yeah.
We were just fired up, ready to play, but it was controlled. They could turn that volume up and down when they needed to. I think they are going to have nerves in Cincinnati. So for me, I am not, like, I'm going to be nervous during the game.
Sure.
If they lose, I'll be devastated that happened, obviously. I want to see the crew win this game. But I feel like this is a huge game, not the biggest game in franchise history. You know what I mean? It's the biggest game in Cincinnati's history, period, bar none, end of story. For the crew, this is...
It's a big game.
It's a huge game. But it's not the same. You can't replicate what it means for Cincinnati. So it's going to be the nerves there, and I feel good about the crew in that spot. I think they can weather the storm, play their game. They've been in tight situations. They've been in situations where the crowd's crazy. I think they're ready. I think they're good. I think they win this game 3-1.
The fact that you're not nervous is making me nervous, and that you go 3-1, I also had a match day prediction of 3-1.
Okay. Well, we have watched a lot of crew soccer and a lot of Cincinnati and a lot of everything this year. And I think we're both, the fact we both arrived at that.
Most crew soccer I've ever watched in my life is this year.
Yeah, right.
I've watched damn near every game. Well, 90 minutes every game.
And I know we're in the minority on this, but isn't it nice to just be able to say, I know where every game is.
Yeah.
I paid the fee. I hated that I had to pay the fee, but I paid the fee.
I know where it's at.
I know where every game is.
Yeah.
I'm good. So, all right, 3-1.
Yeah.
Matt Miazga, go to hell. Go sit there and watch your team lose. Do nothing about it. I don't know. Will Matt Miazga feel like after the crew win, he'll be like, stop. Or if like Cincinnati gets up 1-0 in like the 17th minute, he'll be like, stop the vote. Stop the count. It's good.
We're good. We're done.
Maybe. That's a little
joke.
Maybe
you can ask Jeff Cameron about that.
Those two see eye to eye, I think, on quite a bit. We'll take a break. Actually, we'll take a break. We're going to come back, get Neighbor Eric's question of the week.
Yep.
We will talk a little VAR, and then you will hear from Tiz and Bez Pachenko. That is all coming up next. You're listening to Bone and Beam United.
What a moment!
Now back to Bone and Beam United.
You can always tweet the program at Bone Beam United. I'm sure we'll be very active on Twitter during this game. You can follow us as well at BrandonBeam971, at Degenerate T-Bone on Twitter. So let's talk a little bit about the question of the day. Neighbor Eric always gives you one of those, Beam. I'd love to hear what he has this week for
us. He does. He always gives me a question. I see him in the driveway from time to time. It was funny the other day. I was pulling in from work at about 9:30 in the morning, and Eric was going into the office for the first time in a while. He's like, oh, I get to go on a field trip today. And I'm like, oh, where are you going? He goes, I'm going into the office. I'm so excited. I'm going to go down to local at the end.
Oh, nice.
He works downtown. He works at... Yeah, he works down in the German Village.
If you could
Village.
Give out exactly where he works like all of his address and info, I think that'd be great for
He works downtown.
He works
downtown, and he's like, I'm going to local after the game, and that'll be good. I'm going to watch some Champions League down there. I'm like, oh, that's fun. Tell all of your Liverpool friends that they must be enjoying Europa League. That didn't work out great for me because United are surely on their way there. But, Liverpool didn't make it this past year.
Hey, that's right.
But he was excited. He's like, hey, so then I'm sure he had a few drinks, which then conjured up this question of the day. It was Neighbor Eric's question of the week. What's your favorite holiday beer and or cocktail that you enjoy during the holiday season? For me, this year, I've really been enjoying 12 Dogs of Christmas by Thirsty Dog.
So 12 Dogs is one of my favorite Christmas beers of all time.
Do you know the story behind the 12 Dogs and the Great Lake Christmas Ale?
No, I do not, actually. I know about both of them, and they're both excellent.
So the Great Lakes Christmas Ale, I think, is the most famous, right? You know, like...
Yeah, certainly in this region. I don't know how it does across the country, but I know here it's like... I think everyone who likes beer, who does the craft beer thing, has to get a 12-pack or a 6-pack of that at least once before Christmas.
Yeah,
right?
it's really good, and they do a nice job. But the 12 Dogs of Christmas, if you liked in the early iterations of the Great Lakes Christmas Ale, and you've had it every year, and you know, beer changes from year to year. Like Oberon is different every year when it comes out for its summer release. Sometimes it's a little more orangey, and sometimes it's maybe got a little more of like the spices in it. But I noticed one year, and I'm like, huh, that's weird. Like this Great Lakes doesn't maybe taste the way that I thought it would. And it wasn't bad, but it wasn't maybe up to the standard that I held Great Lakes Christmas Ale up to. And so a couple of years ago, one of the main brewers for the Great Lakes Brewing Company actually left and went to 12 Dogs, and he was like the proprietor and the recipe holder for the Christmas Ale.
Okay.
So if you like Great Lakes Christmas Ale and you've been drinking it for forever, the 12 Dogs, their brewery, hired the guy from Great Lakes. So the 12 Dogs Christmas Ale is actually the original recipe for the Great Lakes Christmas Ale.
Yeah, because they change that recipe now every year with the Great Lakes, which is fine. I like that's part of the allure of it, right?
Is
you get to try something new. I do like both of those a lot. But the 12 Dogs, I didn't know that about it, but I have enjoyed that one quite a bit. I also like, this isn't necessarily a Christmas Ale, but I know Land Grant does their Beard Crumbs, which is a stout that I enjoy. It's always
one of the very few stouts that I enjoy. I also really like... Because it's winter, like, I drink probably 6 to 10 stouts or porters every year. Like, I don't drink many of them, but Parsons North does like a really good, I think it's a banana bread stout. Like, it's like world class.
Okay. I haven't tried that one. That's I might have one. To. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the banana flavors in beer, but usually that's on the wheat beers. Like, I will not, I'm not
like
a big
a
fan
Hogarden?
Of the,
like, yeah,
I'm not a big fan of the Hefs that have the clovey banana-y stuff.
Me either.
But I will give the stout a try with the banana bread. I would
let it sit out too, because I was there in the brewery and
I'll let it open up a little bit.
Let it open up like a wine. So we had a couple of beers and then we got the stout and we let it sit there until we were done with that. And then that was like our last beer. And
that's a good idea. Yeah. I like that a lot, actually. Now, my go-to beer that I do always get every time around Christmas, I like that Shiner Christmas that they do, the Shiner Bock Christmas Ale. I don't know why. I acknowledge it's not the best Christmas ale I've ever had. It's just a thing that, like, my wife, one year I had said, because I'd had it a few years in a row and I really enjoyed it, and she was like, are you going to get that Shiner Christmas, you know, stuff? And Cheer is what it's called, I believe. Shiner Cheer. And I said, yeah, I probably will. I just, you know, whatever. I got to get to the store. So then, like, the next day she came home and had it with a little, like, she put a little ribbon on it and was like, here, early Christmas present. And I was just like, I mean, it's nothing. It's available widely. Yeah. She didn't have to go hunting for it, but it was just that thought of in the moment.
That's
she
nice.
Remembered that I liked that beer and grabbed it. And she was asking because she was making sure I didn't already have some. That was a nice moment. So it's always had a little special place in my heart because of stuff like that.
I like that. That's a good backstory.
Yeah.
On that. I've never had a better beer in my entire, well, I've had two that I can recall, that three actually. Three of the best beers I've ever had in my life were, we were down at we were at Abita in New Orleans.
Oh yeah, I've heard such good. I love, is that their purple?
Yeah, what's purple, the
one?
Haze.
Purple Haze, right? Yeah.
So Purple Haze is like their main flagship beer.
One of my favorites.
That's
yes.
great. So we were down there before, like, they were opening up like a brand new brewery, like a big gigantic one, and so they were still like brewing out of their old like warehouse when we last went down there. And we just showed up to the brewery because we thought, oh, they're going to do brewery tours and everything. We kind of just showed up and they're like, we don't really do brewery tours in here, but you guys are free to, you know, hang out and drink some draft beers in here. So it was free. Like, free beers were college students at the time. I had a Restoration Pale Ale, which they don't make anymore, which was maybe the best beer I've ever had. I went up to the Bell's Brewery in Kalamazoo. That's a nice little, I wouldn't say a day trip, but if you're looking to get away for the weekend, go up there. It's a really cool place. It's called the Eccentric Cafe, which is like Bell's Restaurant and Brewery.
Right.
Their Two-Hearted straight from the tap.
Oh.
It was world class. And then the Christmas Ale at Great Lakes with like the cinnamon sugar rim.
Oh God. Yeah. That would be amazing. That would be awesome.
Pretty good. But always, so I wouldn't consider this like a Christmas, but I would consider this a holiday cocktail for me. And usually, because I'm a bourbon guy, like I like bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
I like gin sometimes, but I really I'm a big like aperitif guy. I like Campari,
really?
And I like Aperol.
Okay.
And I know it tastes maybe like a granddad's cough medicine kind of a thing, but I really, during the holidays, like if I'm drinking a mixed drink, I love a Negroni.
I really can't
get enough of a Negroni.
Oh, Negroni.
Little
TikTok sound is infested in my brain.
And the way that I like to do it, it's supposed to be third, 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 gin, vermouth, Campari.
Okay.
I like to go good helping of gin, good helping of Campari, and then like a vermouth topper. I don't love vermouth that much.
Right.
And then you express the orange around it, get the orange peel on there, and I'm telling you, one is great, two is probably the perfect number. And then in the words of Anthony Bourdain, you have three of them. You don't know where your pants went.
There you go. That's what we like. I will add another good cocktail, and then we'll get on to more soccer stuff.
Yeah, who cares?
We went and took a road trip a few years ago. Me and Pork Chop, who used to work here, Richard, our old producer on
Not
Man
Chops.
And Bone.
Different.
Not Chops. There
different.
Was Pork Chop, and then there was Chops later. But Pork Chop and I went to Bristol, Tennessee for a NASCAR race. We stayed in Wytheville, Virginia. Which is, it looks like Wytheville, but small town. Stayed there. The sports bar we went to said the only sports bar in Wytheville. So not the best, just the only one. And it was one of those converted Pizza Huts that had like turned into something else. So that's what it was. We go in there, and he actually had the idea. He said, hey, can you give me a shot of Fireball and a shot of Crown Apple?
Okay.
And put it together. And
mix it.
Yeah, just like, just pour those two in a glass, and I, that's what I want. And the girl said, okay. And so she poured a shot of each over ice. And then she came back and had taken the straw that you get and, like, stuck it in there and, like, was sampling it as she brought it over. She's like, oh, that's pretty good. And then gave it to us. And we're like, I don't know. At least she didn't put her finger in it and just lick it. But
that's
whatever.
A bartender trick. You
that's fine.
Taste your
it was
cocktails
nice.
Without getting hammered.
Yeah, yeah. But then we tried that, and it tastes like apple pie.
Yeah.
So the way I would enhance that is I feel like if you took that, I've not done this, but if you took and put a little maybe whipped cream on top and then sprinkled some crushed graham cracker over it, I feel like that could be a really nice little boozy sweet cocktail if you like apple pie. But here's what I plan on doing. This is what I drink every year on Christmas Eve as Santa is making his way and I am doing last minute preparations and all that.
For the big fella.
For the big fella and all that. Usually there's midnight mass for, you know, they put on the TV at midnight here. I don't know. It's obviously midnight. It's happened like 6 hours ago, but that's when we see it, right? I'm not Catholic. I'm not very religious at all. But I enjoy just that the church, like, they have the big organ. They have the, you know, the huge ceremony.
They've got the things.
It's the Vatican, right? So we know it's kind of the
big guy. It's the big Pope.
It's the Pope. He's coming out, right?
He's got the garb on.
Because I'm up late, usually what I end up doing is watching It's a Wonderful Life and crying. And then the news comes on, and that is where I will start to get out my...
Crying for all the depressing stories on there.
That's, well, true enough. But then by that point, I'm like, they're tracking Santa, they're doing all the stuff, they got the winter forecast, and I'm getting my bourbon out, and I am preparing myself my bourbon of the year, which is where I sit there, and I have a nice, probably 3-ounce pour of bourbon. Neat.
Three fingers?
Yeah, at least. And I sit there and watch the... You know, midnight crosses over. We are now in Christmas morning, and that is my moment where everyone else, except for my wife, probably is asleep. Big guy hasn't come yet, and I'm just sitting there watching the Pope do his thing, and I'm sipping a bourbon. And it's just, I don't know why it brings me a peace, but it does. I enjoy it.
It's like watching Messi in the World Cup final.
Watching the big guy do his thing. Yeah. Right. Well, both of them lead a religion to some degree or another.
Yes,
so
they do.
You're right. So anyway, that's
Do you have a bourbon already picked out for that, or is it just what you're kind of feeling like?
I'm going to do the thing, which I've seen people do, and I've done it years ago, but it's been a long time, where you take apples, vanilla, cinnamon sticks, and you infuse a bourbon. So I'm going to do that with the hopes of drinking. I got to actually do it in the next couple of days, so it'll be ready by then. Either that, I do have a Bardstown bourbon that I like. It's called Bardstown Bourbon Company. I've been to the distillery. I've poured my own bottle. It was a great experience. They have a bottled in bond that I have not tried.
Nice.
So I may, if I can resist, open that up. I may, if I can't resist and that's already opened, I may then just do the infused one and try that. But either way, bourbon, Christmas Eve, that's my cocktail.
That sounds wonderful.
Just straight pour of bourbon.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you, neighbor Eric. That was good. I appreciated the question.
Thanks for the 11 minutes of content.
That's right. VAR is a mess, Beamer. This comes from the Paris Saint-Germain Newcastle tilt, where Newcastle is leading this game 1-0.
98th minute.
In Paris. 93rd minute. They're whatever. In Paris, right?
I
think they were in Paris. I think it was. PSG was at home.
Yeah, they were.
And so they're winning this game. This is a big deal.
Newcastle's winning the game.
Newcastle is, yeah. They're on 4 points at this moment, and PSG is on 6. So in the standings, that's a, you know, 3-pointer. You're going to leap them in the standings. That's a big deal. They get a penalty call, PSG does, on a Newcastle defender who the ball, he is running to stop a shot. And as he stops, his hands go up a little bit away from his body, but in a natural motion. The ball is kicked. It hits his ribs. And then as it hits his ribs, it bounces up to hit the underside of his arm, which is up and away from his body. They do not call this. Am I right?
Yeah.
They did not call this a penalty.
VAR clocked down.
Yeah. VAR stopped it and said, you got to look at this. They looked at it and said, penalty to PSG, 98th minute.
And they Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah. And they tie it up 1-1. That's how the game ends. So now the standings read PSG 7 points and Newcastle 5. That's BS. Should be, honestly, if Newcastle could have seen that out without a penalty, it would have been 7-6. They'd have been up second place in the thing. Instead, PSG remains in the, you know, second spot there, which is a huge turn.
Well, and the wild part, too, if you look at that group, like PSG have to take on Dortmund. Dortmund already leading that group.
Yeah.
Dortmund already in.
Dortmund. How about that?
Losing Jude Bellingham and then just...
Doesn't matter.
Winning the group with AC Milan, PSG, and Newcastle. Like,
ridiculous.
I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, I did not.
So, like, Newcastle draws AC Milan at home for their last game. Dortmund get PSG at home. All of those teams still alive in that situation. But I'm watching this game. They don't call anything. I'm like, that's, you know, ball bounces off of his body. I'm thinking to myself, like, there's, that's not a handball. Like, that, you know, yeah, that happens. And sometimes, like, if a ball bounces weird and it hits somebody on the hand, like, okay, but he's going in for a tackle. Ball, like, glances off of his elbow. I didn't think that was going to be a handball at all. I didn't think they were going to overturn it. But it's so maddening because you don't know which set of rules you're going to get each and every game. And it's not like that these guys were bum referees. I mean, the guy in charge of this who overturned the call reffed the World Cup final. Like, they're in high regard as some of the best refs in the entire world. And VAR's calling down, oh, we need to change it. He made the right call on the field. Then you start second-guessing yourself. You're at home. You're in Paris. They're all jeering at you. Okay, we're going to overturn the call. It's so frustrating to watch a game in which you have no clue how the rule is going to be interpreted. Watching from one Premier League game in a 10 o'clock window to watching a game in the 12:30 window to then watching a Champions League game. The same iteration of the same exact play,
yeah,
can happen three different times, and it's going to be ruled three different ways.
And that's where VAR was meant to settle this, and instead we're getting more confusion out of it, which is not what it's supposed to be. UEFA, I believe, to your point, had said this should not be like construed as a – not in the moment of this. Back in the spring – they had their annual conference, yeah, where they go over rules and what they expect from the referees and various other things. And they had said this type of play should not be deemed a penalty. If it plays the man first and his hands are in a natural position, what they don't want to do is put a blanket rule in that says, if your hands are up and it hits your body first, then hit your arms. Well, every defender will then go and defend pretty much any kick,
yeah,
with like their hands up straight out and
like
hoping,
a goalie running.
Yeah. And then hoping that it hits the body first and not their hand. This is, but there's nuance there. You have to be able to look and see his arms were in a natural position. This was not something that I don't think. I mean, again, soccer players are really good at getting us to believe what they want us to believe,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Their job. But that I did not think looked like him in an unnatural position, and I do not think it should have been called a penalty.
I don't think it should have been either. And again, it's not just in this game, but it's my frustration watching the game and not
it
knowing
is
what's going to be called on a day-in, day-out basis. Other Champions League stuff going on. I mean, Bayern Munich against United, like that game is going to be a mess. United need to win to win against Bayern at Old Trafford and hope that Copenhagen Galatasaray tie. Like they're toasting that. Arsenal hammered Lens,
yeah,
yesterday,
they did.
6-0. That was a great performance by them. It's going to be a tough one. Eindhoven going to get through. It looks like. In Group B, Real Madrid, no problem. They're on 15 points in five games. Interesting to see if Braga or Union Berlin, your guys, can move on to that. Napoli sitting in second place on that. I mean, we're getting into decision day, right? The 6th and the 5th or the 6th and the 7th next week,
yeah,
is decision day in the group stage. And all these games, there's no 12:30 games or 12:45 games. Like, all of them go off at the same time.
I have Tuesday and Wednesday off next week.
Wow, look at you.
Just was able to squeeze those in under the deadline.
Three,
get them in.
3 o'clock's gonna be an
Woo!
Awesome time for you.
Yeah, I may. That may be me at a bar. We may just
Good.
Find our way out there. May see what we can do.
Real Sociedad and Inter into the round of 16. Salzburg, Benfica can't catch up to them. Atletico and Lazio going to be into the next round. PSG, Dortmund, Newcastle. We already talked about that. AC Milan still alive.
Yeah.
If they get a win in their last game against Newcastle and PSG. Draw or lose against Dortmund. So we'll see what happens to that. Man City, Erling Haaland, there you go. They're on 15 points. No craziness going to happen in that group. Leipzig's in after him. And then Barcelona, nice job out of them in the group stage. 12 points. They're already through to the next round. And then Porto and Shakhtar sitting on 9. So it's been a fun group stage. I think nothing other than I don't know what I'm supposed to watch when VAR rolls around every time they go
no
to the
kidding.
Box. Like, no clue.
No kidding. I know. It's entirely frustrating. We talked a lot about referees in this podcast, but I know the referees have a tough job. I also know they don't want to do a bad thing. The guys, like you said, the guys in this match ref the World Cup final.
Yeah.
It's not like they're bad refs.
No.
I mean, they are, by grade, the best refs you can get.
In the world.
In the world, and they got this wrong, it appears. So, yeah, man, I don't know what the right answer is there, but it is just so frustrating to watch that. All right, next up, our interview, not our interview, Beam's interview. He and Bobby Carpenter talked with the president of the Columbus Crew, Tim Bezbachenko. You'll hear that interview next from Morning Juice, which is, of course, on The Fan.
Columbus, Cincinnati, all to play for, chance to host MLS Cup. What's the vibe in the building? I know this is a massive week for Columbus.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. And, you know, that was a nice tee up on what we've done so far in the playoffs. And the vibe in the building is strong. It's focused, I would say. Obviously, a couple days after the long match against Orlando where we went 120 minutes, the last few days have been focused on recovery. But the vibe is in the building is electric. The players are focused, and the staff, you know, everybody has just one thing on mind, which is to go down to Cincy and get a result.
So, you know, obviously there's some different roster moves you can make, and regardless of sport, it's always important to have the front office and the coaching aligned on kind of what scheme and how you see players being implemented, finding those players to this scheme. I mean, do you feel like this is maybe a justification for the success and maybe a little ups and downs through some of the early goings, but now this roster is clicking with the style that Wilfried Nancy's trying to put out there?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, it's always a challenge when you're bringing in a new coaching staff to find the alignment so quickly. But we put a lot of effort into making sure that, you know, the coach we brought in really fit the style of play that we're trying to implement, which is to be entertaining and to have possession and to kind of create this identity, not just with the first team, but from our academy to Crew 2 to the first team. And Wilfried Nancy and his coaches really checked all the boxes and fit it to a T. And then kudos to them because they really accepted the project, created an outstanding culture in the locker room and set a high standard for the players. And as you mentioned, it doesn't happen overnight. It didn't. We went through a, you know, very different parts of the year. Mm-hmm. We're up and down. Obviously, there were some games where we conceded late. But I think we addressed each challenge as it came, and Wilfried has done a very good job of learning throughout this season to get to where we are now.
Does he talk in soliloquy and haiku just throughout his life, like when he's not talking about soccer? Because like, you just listen to him in press conferences and you listen to him talk about the game. It's like, well, you know, we could do things X, Y, and Z, and I could talk about, you know, strategies, but really it's beautiful and we want, you know, the fans to enjoy. Like, does he just talk about this? Is that the way he talks, like, throughout his life?
Yeah, it is. He's the French accent helps. You know, we got to say that the French accent helps. I wish we all, you know, could break that out sometimes. But no, he really thinks things about things in a different way, which is helpful. You know, sometimes I have to, and our staff have to be a little bit more pragmatic, and there's a nice blend and balance. But you know, I think the players I know appreciate it because it's not just, how do we get a result? It's about the why. And Wilfried's always talking about why we do things and thinks about it very long term, which is a healthy thing for a club.
He is Tim Bezbachenko, president, general manager of your Columbus Crew, with us here on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Saturday, 6 o'clock, Hell is Real Part 3 down in Cincinnati. Chance to host MLS Cup on the line. And, you know, Bez, we talked last time we had you on here about Patrick Schulte and kind of usurping Aloy room, and Aloy moves on during the transfer period. What he's done at a young age, I really do feel like if you go back to the first Hell is Real instance, he made that mistake. Since then, mm-hmm. He has seemed to put that in the rearview mirror. He had some unbelievable saves down in Orlando, like heroic saves, man of the match type saves. Like, he's been such a crucial point playing out of the back in the way that the coach and the staff want to play this game. Like, can you just explain the growing that he's gone through? Because right now he's one of the best keepers in MLS, and at such a young age, it's very impressive.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see and watch. You know, going back to last year, his first year as a pro, spending the whole year with Crew 2, getting the reps under, you know, Laurent Courtois, and it was very helpful. And then obviously they went on and to win MLS Next Pro Cup. And I know, despite that not being the first team, being in the playoffs and going to a championship, I think really helped him be ready for this year. And then obviously starting the year, seeing what Aloy does every day to be, you know, a better pro and to develop on and off the field is something that's been incredible to watch, and he's really accepted the challenge. And then Wilfried and Phil Borger have really taken him under their wings and spent a lot of time on video, but also just out on the pitch, explaining to him how he can take his game to the next level. And to Pat's credit, he's accepted the challenge and really owned it. So when he made a mistake in Cincinnati, or there's a couple other matches where he maybe either came out for the ball too early, or maybe didn't come out, just talking with him to really talk about having confidence in owning the box, especially the 6-yard box. And I think you've seen that over the last month or two, and certainly in Orlando, where we thought he had one of the best performances he's had in the Crew Crest. So it's exciting to see, but I think he has some more growth to, we haven't seen the best of Schulte yet, which is again exciting.
Does Cucho need to score to get the win in?
Does he need to? I don't think so. It would be great, obviously, if he scores, but he creates so much on and off the ball, and he requires a lot of attention from the defenders, which will be in Cincinnati, that it'll open up space for Diego. I think you saw that in Orlando, where Rossi had, I think, at least 4 or 5 shots that were partly created because of the attention that the opponent has to put on Cucho. So I think Rossi could step up, Darlington. We have a whole host of players that I think can put the ball in the back of the net. But certainly Cucho's engagement, his intensity, and just his all-around quality is something that we need. We need our big players to step up in matches if we're going to end up holding up the cup at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Cucho's been tremendous at this later portion of the stages, too. Just got announced the MLS Best 11. He's kind of going into that false nine, not a true nine, but advanced playmaker role, and he is given defense is quite the terrible time when he's flanked by his comrades right there. Game is won and lost, Bez, by what? Because at the end of the day, I mean, Aiden has been great. Darlington has been great. Darlington scores bangers only. We know that when he does decide a goal, it's usually from outside of the 18. But for me, it's won and lost in the midfield, and you guys have one of the best, if not the best pairing in all of MLS.
Yeah, Aiden and Darlington have been fantastic. Obviously, they do they complement each other so much. You know, Darlington is his ability to keep possession. He's sort of our metronome, who's keeping a high level, so we can advance the ball up the field. And then Aiden not only can put a nice tackle in, but he's getting more in advanced positions to, hopefully find a shot or arrive in the box late. He had a really good shot from distance in Orlando that gave their goalkeeper a difficult save to make. So yeah, we're feeling very strong about our midfield, very good about our midfield. But I think the game's going to be won and lost about whose identity shines through. If we're disciplined and we stick to the way we play, and we're able to kind of dominate the ball in possession and protect ourselves from the counterattack, I think we have a good chance of getting the result.
Yeah, they're going to be without Matt Miazga, too. Just handed out a 3-game suspension by the league. Bez, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Very excited for this opportunity for the city come Saturday, 6 o'clock. No, it's down in Cincy, but go get the win, and then hopefully we'll check in again soon when you guys are hosting MLS Cup next week, all right?
Yeah, thanks for having me. And for the people who want to watch the game, there's a watch party down at lower.com in the pub and on the plaza. So it'd be a fun place to go to catch the match.
That'd be great. Thanks, Bez. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Good stuff, Beam. Love hearing that. Fired up for FC Cincinnati to lose.
Yep.
Hell is real to be hell is won by
Bez
the crew.
Bez sounded pretty confident.
Yeah. That's well, you know what? I don't blame him. I'm in the same boat. Feeling confident, feeling good.
He sounded light. He sounded airy. Sounded like he was in a good mood.
I'm telling you, all the pressure is down in Cincinnati.
All the pressure should be on MLS Cup or MLS for deciding to have this in streaming only. That's stupid.
Hey, man, you could have popped a number with a TV network. Too bad for them. I guess we'll never know. I guess we'll never know what it would have done. But Apple will be happy, I would think, because you will get at least in Ohio, you will get a lot of people watching this. I would think around MLS, you'll get a good number of people watching it who care about the sport. We'll see. No Messi. Shouldn't be the only thing you market for your league.
But you do have Cucho.
And I'll tell you, I think he's ready to have the game. I think this is it. And don't look now, Diego Rossi. We're still there.
You're talking shit.
He's coming on, baby. This is good. I like where we're headed with this 3-headed monster up front. If we could just get Christian Ramirez in the game a little bit earlier for me. But I love how we're doing this. I love the deployment that Nancy's got. I'm excited. Crew, both you and I say 3-1 winners.
Yep.
Let's hope we're right. Either way, we'll reconvene and talk about it next week. Thank you for listening, and we will see you then. It's Bone and Beam United.